The following message is from Christ Community Church in Athens, Georgia. For more information and sermons, go to www.christ-community.com. Thank you for listening.
These men rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. You can see it right there in verse 10 of Matthew chapter 2. There are four words in the original language. Kairo, sphodra, megas kara. Rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. Four words that remind you and me that giving gifts at Christmas is a good idea. Four words, three gifts. You can see it there, right there in verse 11. They opened their treasures. They literally opened a treasure chest, and inside that chest is a bag of gold and vials of frankincense and myrrh. Luxurious gifts given to a king from the wealth of the nations. Gifts that remind you that giving gifts at Christmas is a good idea. Now, the history of gift giving around Christmas goes back at least 1,500 years. It goes all the way back to this Greek gift giver and bishop named St. Nicholas, who has become what we now know as Santa Claus. Combined with this story about these magicians, these kings, the quite honestly, there's not a lot of detail in this story, and so it leads to mythology and folklore about three kings and manger scenes where everybody comes to see the baby Jesus. You know, we live in an interesting time when it comes to gift giving around Christmas, because even though we can look historically and biblically and go, this is good, a lot of us this morning feel tension around gift giving at Christmas. We love the wonder of Christmas, particularly those of us who have kids in our house at Christmas. We're parents, we're grandparents, aunts, uncles. Like, we love that experience, but we feel tension because we know, we've lived enough of life to know that gifts never ultimately satisfy the deepest longings of our soul. There was a survey that was done last year, 20,000 Europeans, and 70% of them said that they felt like way too much attention was being paid to gift giving at Christmas. And 42% of them said that they felt pressured to spend more money at Christmas, and 10% of them borrowed money so they could give gifts at Christmas. And so we feel that tension, we feel that weight of knowing that while gifts are good things, they aren't ultimate things, particularly when we think about all the money, all the attention, all the energy that we're going to put into gift giving with people that are close to us, when the needs of the world are so prevalent, the needs of our community, the needs of people in this city, in this state, in this country, in this world. And so we struggle to find how should we feel about giving gifts at Christmas. Now, this story helps us. Four words, rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. Three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, to teach us one lesson. And the lesson is this. That while there is more to Christmas than presents under the tree, gift giving is a powerful way for us to get to the heart of Christmas. So let me frame it up for you, okay? So here's the question that I think out of Matthew 2 that we're supposed to wrestle with, that you are supposed to wrestle with, okay? So here's the question. Put this on the screen. Why do I give gifts at Christmas? So why over the next few days, as you're going to give gifts to family and friends, why do I do that? And so here's the answer from Matthew chapter 2. I do that to multiply my enjoyment of Jesus. So when you think about all the reasons why you're going to do this act of giving gifts to other people, at the heart of the matter, ultimately, the reason why we do this is to multiply our enjoyment of Jesus. Now, in our church, we want to make sure that what we're saying, we're actually getting from the scriptures themselves. So I want you to pay attention particularly to verses 10 and 11. So let's see this. At the end of verse 11, you see these men giving gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Why do they give those gifts? Now, when you see right there at the beginning of this, in our translation that we're looking at, it says, then, opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. That word then means it's connected to what comes before it. So why do these men give gifts? Look at the beginning of verse 11. Going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshiped him. That little phrase there, fell down and worshiped, is the word proskuneo. It's where we get the word prostrate. I got confused when I was growing up about the difference between prostrate and prostate. That created a lot of confusion and awkward moments. But the idea of laying prostrate, it's an act of worship. It's an act of declaring the worth of someone else. Why do they do that? They give gifts. Why? As an act of worship. Why? Why is this an act of worship? Because, verse 10, when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. So let's turn it back around and go straight into it. These men see this star. They are overwhelmed by joy. As one translator puts it, they are deliriously happy. How do you know that? Because what you see here is an act of worship. What happens internally erupts outwardly, not only into them bowing down before this small child and his mother, but also in the giving of gifts. So why do we give gifts? Because in the giving of gifts, you and I have an opportunity in gift giving itself to worship Jesus. You and I have an opportunity to experience what we see here. Not just joy, not just great joy, but a joy so great that we end up rejoicing exceedingly in the greatness of our joy. Every gift that you give is an opportunity for you to multiply your enjoyment of Jesus. Now, hopefully that's simple and clear enough from the scriptures. They rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. That created this act of worship that intensified into gift giving. So here's what I would want us to see. Gift giving is an intensifier of our desire for Jesus. One of the things I thought about this week is when I'm wondering about the experience of these men, it says in verse 10 that they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy, and then they bowed down to Jesus and they gave gifts. What I was thinking about was, did their joy grow from that initial experience of seeing the star through gift giving, or did it wane? And the reason why I asked is, think about what the next few days are going to be like, especially if you're around kids. Quite honestly, it's true for us as adults too. That moment before you open the first gift, right before your kids open that first gift, the excitement level is palpable. They are rejoicing exceedingly with great joy, and there are moments in their opening of presents where they experience this. You can see it, you can feel it, okay? But I want you to think about the moment when that last present is opened. This will happen on the 27th at my parents' house. The last present is going to be opened by my boys, and the question is whether there will be more excitement and joy at the end of that process, or will there be less? Will our joy grow through this act of giving and receiving gifts, or will it wane? My assumption is that what you see here is counter to our experience. What I don't think you have happening is these men, and we don't know how many they are, but these men come and they offer these gifts not as the end of their joy, but as the continuation of their joy. Not as the exhaustion of the very last resources of their joy, but as intensifiers of their joy. So instead of the experience that we have so often of our enjoyment of Jesus, our enjoyment of the experience of Christmas waning through the process of giving and receiving gifts, this story, it gives us an opportunity to dream. To dream that what might happen in the lives of the people that you're around. That you might see a greater joy erupt and grow through them as they come to enjoy the gifts that God is giving them. That they might grow in their enjoyment of Jesus in the actual giving of gifts themselves and the receiving of gifts themselves. It's an opportunity not only for you to dream, but for you to drill down, for you to not let the moment pass, for you to not just let the happiness and excitement and fun of Christmas pass on by without helping connect the dots. Now, let's go ahead and decide as a group of people that we're going to choose to make the opening of presents at Christmas as much fun as we humanly can, okay? It's one of the beauties that we see laid out in the scriptures is a picture of life in this world in which while we know that no experience of joy is ultimate, that doesn't mean that we don't push the envelope. That doesn't mean that we don't try to suck all that there is out of life. And so in this good thing that we have on Christmas, when we open and exchange and give and get gifts, God giving us permission to make that as fun as we possibly can. While at the same time, being able to help people experience, know in real ways, in that moment, and this is just for you, remember this, that in that moment when you either in the giving or getting of gifts, when there is a moment of, I don't know if it'll get beyond gratitude or thankfulness for you, perhaps it gets into happiness, excitement, perhaps there's going to be a moment over the next few days when you are going to rejoice exceedingly with great joy. That is going to be your experience. Great. In that moment, the only translation that you need to have in your head is that's Jesus. One of the curious things that Matthew does throughout his entire story of the life of Jesus is that he keeps showing us that the proper response of Jesus whenever anybody encounters him is worship. But that worship is a contingent upon somebody having their theology all put together and built out and matured. And so for you and me, it doesn't come down to how much we know or how mature our faith is. It's us being able to translate our human experience and to be able to translate this experience of enjoying this act of giving and receiving gifts and seeing that as a very real way of Jesus reminding us of how deeply he loves us. So our target at Christmas this year, as a church, as a group of people, followers of Jesus in this city, is to hope and pray and set out to do, verse 10, that we might see in our homes, with our families, a very real experience and expression of our joy being so great that people would look around and go, they are rejoicing exceedingly with great joy. Let's talk about how to do that practically. Two ways. This is the most basic way that I can help you, okay? That if you want to go into Christmas and to make Christmas all that it should be, all that you want it to be, for yourself, for the people you love, for the people you care for. This is the goal, joy, great joy. A great joy in which we rejoice exceedingly in the greatness of that joy. The first thing that I would encourage you to do is to pray and to ask for it. There's no sense here of these men creating this. There's nothing in this text that tells us that what they were after is that experience. The experience found them. And so for us, rather than trying to manufacture joy, maybe the best thing that we can do for each other and for ourselves is to pray and ask for God to help us enjoy him in the midst of this very common yet extraordinary thing that we do at Christmas, in the giving and getting of gifts. So we pray, and then we pay attention. It's that moment, and it could be that moment in the giving of gifts where you experience the joy of knowing Jesus, that your joy for Christ intensifies is in wrapping the gift. Or it might be in laying it out under the tree. Or it could be as somebody, the anticipation of somebody opening this thing that you're surprising them with. Or the very act of them opening it and the first time their eyes see what this thing is and you know this is fantastic. Like they're about to lose their mind. Whenever and wherever that moment happens for you, where you are thankful, grateful, happy, excited, overwhelmed with joy, deliriously happy, whenever that happens, and when you are paying attention to go, this is what this is. This is not just an opportunity, but this is the reality of Jesus coming close and allowing me to experience not just the gifts of our God, but for me to experiencing him as our gift. Now, there's always somewhere else you can go with this, okay? So that's the basic level. You pay attention, you pray. You pray, you pay attention. That's going to put you in an opportunity that's going to give you a chance to be able to experience and multiply your enjoyment of Jesus in the giving of gifts. Now, if you're thinking next level, if you're trying to think about this as a parent particularly, as a grandparent, as an aunt and uncle, you're thinking particularly with kids, how do you do this well? I'm going to give you two things that I think you can do that will be helpful. Number one, you choose fun. I know that's challenging for people who are Presbyterians, but we're going to choose fun. By the way, that's the last time I'm using that phrase to talk about us as a church. I just retired it. Because there should be no connection to that for us. That there should be no wondering that because we just happen to have the name Presbyterian in our church's name, because of our theology and our ecclesiology and all of our ologies, that should lead us to anything other than this experience of overwhelming, deliriously happy joy in who Jesus is that spills out in our gatherings, in our lives, in our homes, in our neighborhoods, in this workplace, in our workplaces. Completely lost my train of thought there. If we're going to choose fun, then practically, don't let the least fun person in your family choose how to do Christmas. Okay? Let the kids choose. Let the kids put it together. I'm telling you right now, I've already told my six-year-old this. I haven't told Jonathan's here. Jonathan, you and Will and Ben are going to talk to this afternoon. You're going to put together a plan, and you're going to basically help us under how do we have as much fun as we possibly can when we open presents tomorrow. Got it? Okay. Choose fun. Have a great time. This is a moment in 2017, in the course of human history, in the story of your family, the story of your relationship with your friends, where you are able to throw off everything else that's going on around you and to enjoy all the good things that God gives you, okay? So choose fun and then connect the dots. So this is where you're going to have to show some leadership, show some initiative, but at some point in time, and I mean more than just, when I'm talking about connecting the dots of Jesus, I'm not talking simply about reading the Christmas story and then letting havoc just be wreaked all throughout your house and everybody kind of forgetting within a nanosecond that this is about Jesus at all. I mean that find a way before, maybe during, probably not, but after, to be able to have conversations, brief if your children are small, longer as they're growing, where you're talking about the experience of gratitude, thankfulness, happiness, being deliriously happy, overwhelmed with joy, rejoicing exceedingly with great joy, that feeling that you had in that moment, do you help the people around you know that that feeling is a gift from Jesus to help that person know how much Jesus loves them? Isn't it amazing that our God cares so much about the details of our lives that he doesn't just tell us that he loves us? He doesn't just love us in ways that we think of as being super spiritual, but in the ordinary everydayness of our lives. And in these moments and seasons that we celebrate and we section off and we want to milk the life out of all of it, that God gives it to us and says, not only is that a good thing that I'm giving you, but it's a way for you to know and experience the best thing about your life and your reality, and that's me. Now, you might be sitting there going, okay, I'm a little bit confused because the question that you had on the screen, Matt, was, why do I give gifts? But what I'm sensing and feeling and where I'm kind of experiencing this is how I respond when I get gifts. And I get that. And there's a little bit of a tension here. And I don't want us to kind of cleave that so well that we fail to put things together rightly. So here's what I would say. When you look at these men giving gifts in Matthew 2, and if we believe that this is an expression of their joy, that is an experience of their joy, where did their joy come from? Why did they give these gifts? Well, we just said earlier, the giving of gifts is an act of worship. It's an experience of this rhythm that we see all throughout the Bible. God says, I'm going to bless you so that you will be a blessing. We love because he first loved us. We give gifts because we are the recipients of this unbelievable gift. That there is a God, and that our God didn't just drop some good things from heaven, but he came himself. There's an impulse here, an ambition for us to love in the giving of gifts because we've been loved, to bless in the giving of gifts because we've been blessed. Now, as we're listening, how do we respond to this? Now, I said at the very beginning that the way that we respond anytime the scriptures are open is that we want to respond with honesty and with hope. Whenever you read the scriptures, one of the most helpful ways to get honest with what God's saying to you is to ask yourself, where are you in this story? Now, what's interesting here is that I think when we read Matthew 2 and we read this part of the story, that we are supposed to identify with the wise men in real ways. We've just been talking about that for the last 20 minutes. They gave gifts, we give gifts, okay? But I think there's another group of people that we have to pay attention to if we're going to get the full weight and opportunity of this text. So in this story, if you go all the way back to verse 1, we're told that Jesus is born, these men show up, and they ask Herod, where's the king? And then Herod brings in the chief priests and the scribes, the professional worshipers and the professional Bible experts. People like you and me, because I don't know if you've noticed this, but in our city, a lot of people are going to look at us as followers of Jesus, and they're all going to lump us in. There's not going to be any difference between me and you. They're not going to see any difference between me, the professional pastor, and you as the person who's still crazy enough to show up in a room like this on a Sunday. The people who should get it are the ones who miss it. The people who have the answers because they know their Bible and they know their theology are the ones who miss it. The people who should know better are the people who know the answer and had no desire at all to follow these men into Bethlehem. They give the answer. And so this is what we have to wrestle with. I think if we're being honest, we have to pay attention to the places now, today, right now. Some of us who've grown up in a family that says, look, we're followers of Jesus. We do Christian things. And there have been moments and times where we've experienced exceeding great joy in who Jesus is. And now we find ourselves rather indifferent. We're here this morning because we have to be. And we have moments in Christmas where all the things that we want to believe and all the things that we want to go for when it comes to our relationship with God, we set off to the side. Honesty, I think, compels us to say that it's easy for us to miss it, to take Jesus for granted, to be so familiar with him that we can get into a room like this and we can anticipate how the preacher is going to say things and where he's going to lead us and knowing this, that, and the other and singing familiar songs and verbalizing words that we've sung thousands of times and our hearts being disconnected. But there's a mistake here that we can make as we hear that and maybe it grabs us in a particular place. Before we set out and create our plans to be more excited about Jesus, to help the people in our family, our kids, be more excited about Jesus. Before we do that, I want you to understand the rhythm and pattern that's here. When you look at verse 10, the reason these men rejoiced exceedingly with great joy is not because of their plans and plots and schemes. It was because they saw the star. They didn't. The star found them. It appears. And so for you and me, I want you to consider this. I want you to consider the possibility that God brought you in here today. You didn't come just because you're doing the thing that you should do. You didn't come because you're the one dragging your family in here. This isn't about you and whatever experience that you and I are going to have enjoying Jesus here. The possibility to see him is because of what he's done and who he is. And let me help you with this. If you're going, that's great, okay? I'm supposed to multiply my enjoyment of Jesus. What part of him am I supposed to enjoy? This is the beauty of looking at parts and pieces of the Bible and letting things bubble to the surface and just enjoying those things. So when you look at verse 6 and this prophecy from the Old Testament book of Micah, when Micah prophesies that the Messiah is going to be born in Bethlehem, he describes the Messiah as two things, a ruler and a shepherd. You can see it right there. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. So this is the opportunity you have. What should you allow yourself to enjoy about Jesus this morning? Two things. He's a ruler. He's the king. And as the king, he controls every single part and particle of your life. The ray of the sun, this morning hidden behind clouds. On an atomistic molecular level, Jesus is in control. He's a ruler, and he's a shepherd. What do shepherds do? They protect and they provide. As you think about this year, and some of us, this year has been challenging. This season of the year is always tough for some of us. It's uncomfortable. It's sad. We feel lonely in a crowded room. We say Christmas is no big deal because we don't want to tap into the things that are scary and horrifying and lonely. And God gives you an opportunity now to look back and not just simply dwell on the things that aren't there, but to think about how, what are the ways in which God has provided for you this way? Grateful for the small things, air, whatever physical strength that you have, the material things around you, the conversation that encouraged you last week, the conversation that challenged you, the simple things that you can look around and you take for granted, but they're gifts from God. How has he provided for you, and how has he protected you? How has he protected your family? The almost wreck, the sickness that because of the miracle, the divine-inspired miracle of modern medicine, you are able to live and not die from things that would have killed people a generation ago, 100 years ago. So you don't have to know everything about Jesus. But this Christmas season, will you give yourself permission? Will you open yourself to the reality that Jesus is your ruler? He's your king. He's your shepherd. He's your protector. He's your provider. And in the giving and getting of gifts, may you experience an intensifying desire for him as your king, as your shepherd. Look, if you aim for joy over the next few days, you might miss Jesus. If you aim for Jesus, it's not crazy to imagine gratitude and thanks growing into delight, growing into an experience, a moment, a day of rejoicing exceedingly with great joy.